Welcome to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you are ready to find your inner magic, develop great habits, and a rock steady mindset to feel confident, comfortable, and fit in your body, you are in the right place. I am Kim Barnes Jefferson, and I'll be giving you weekly doses of health, fitness, and life tips sprinkled with humor and real talk. If you're ready to be consistent without the stress of perfection, magic makers, it's time to slip into your favorite pair of PJs, grab some coffee, kick back, and listen to today's show. This week's iTunes review is brought to you by ML Martel. She writes, 5 stars. Kim is more than just knowledgeable in just health and fitness. She is supportive, reassuring, and on the level. She gives it to you straight, just the way most people need it. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate that review. And you too can review Fit Girl Magic Podcast. Just go to iTunes or wherever you subscribe to this show. And just leave me a 5-star review. I love them. I take them to heart. I just want to make sure that I'm bringing you the best stuff. So thank you so much for all of you who have left me a review so far. I can't wait to highlight you. Hey, Magic Makers, it's Kim here. And I wanted to bring you this amazing conversation. It was recorded back in January, right after the untimely death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter, Gigi. And I felt it was really important that, you know, to share the information from my guest, Amy Antonellis, who is an attorney here in Massachusetts, about family planning and estate planning. And, you know, I just felt like I met her at a conference several years ago, and she just, you know, really broke down the basics of what we all need to make sure that all of our affairs are in order in the event of an untimely death or an unplanned long-term sickness or illness. And then now here we are, this episode is in the queue to air, and we're in the midst of the COVID-19, the coronavirus pandemic. And again, this episode still is very timely because, you know, we are never promised a day. And given that this virus can take hold of anyone, and if you have any type of, you know, pre-existing condition, it seems to really, you know, take hold of those and really make this virus ravage your body way tougher than anything we've experienced in our lifetime. So this episode, I'm challenging you to listen through it. It's hard stuff. It's stuff that we don't ever want to think about, right? We want to think that things are magically done for us. And the beauty about Amy is that she lays it out very simply and eloquently. And if you are in the state of Massachusetts, you know, this is, she's your girl. Full disclosure, she is my family and estate attorney. But when I met her, she just gives it to you straight, just like I do. And it's more about, you know, the things that you need to have in place, why you need to have them in place. And guess what? This pertains to you, even if you aren't a multimillionaire. So have a listen. And especially in these current times, it is essential for all of us to have some type of plan for if we are not able to make decisions for ourselves. So have a listen, and I would love to hear your feedback. Hey, Magic Makers. Today is a little bit of a different conversation, but it's a necessary conversation. It's that conversation, I guess I'm going to call it that awkward conversation that we all know we should have, but we don't have. And we're not quite sure, how do we bring this up? And I wanted to have this conversation because, you know, at the time of this recording, Kobe Bryant has just passed away in a helicopter crash. He's 41 years old. And it really got me thinking about you and many people out there where, you know, we think we have more time than we do. And
let's be honest, nothing is ever promised to us. And so I wanted to, my guest today is Ms. Amy Antonellis, and she is a attorney here in Massachusetts. And full disclosure, she's my attorney. And I met her a few years ago, and we were talking about estate planning and how many people don't have a clue either how to get started or that they should get started. So without further ado, Ms. Amy Antonellis.
Hi, Kim. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here too, because one of the things I adore about you is that this is a very complicated subject. And you are able to help myself, my husband, my family really understand all the moving parts and what we needed to do to protect ourselves.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I just kind of want to start out by saying a lot of people, like you said, think that estate planning is an awkward conversation. And I want to change the tone of that to it really being an empowering conversation, right? So I tell my clients all the time, you're never going to be younger or healthier than you are today in here, right here in this moment. And it's a lot easier to start this conversation from a place of knowledge and power when we can just have a conversation sitting across the table versus waiting for panic to strike and all of a sudden we're in a hospital or a rehab facility or something unexpected's happened. Once you hit that sort of crisis zone moment, there's no additional mental headspace, right?
No.
I'm the last person you want to see. So never mind having a conversation about estate planning.
Right.
So what I try to tell people is this is an opportunity for you to sort of learn about the process and then make level-headed decisions from a calm space that's going to inevitably end up with a plan that makes most sense for you and not having somebody create a plan on the fly or having the court be involved.
Right. Exactly. And, that was what the statement you said is what really got me to make that phone call to you, was that I was never going to be younger or healthier than I was today. And you're absolutely right, because, I could go to the doctor tomorrow and get a devastating health diagnosis.
Right.
And like you said, it puts you in panic mode. And when you're in panic mode, you're not making rational decisions.
Yeah. It's survival. That's really where you're coming from.
Right.
So getting ahead of this really puts you in this position of what's going to be best for me and what's going to be best for my family.
All right. So let's break it down. So here I am, I'm a 40-something year old person. I have some kids. Why should I do this?
Yeah. So the reality is sort of like we talked about before, if you don't pick what you want to have happen, it's either the state picking for you or somebody like scrambling to step up into power. So whenever I talk about a comprehensive estate plan with my clients, what we're really talking about, it's a twofold approach. It's making sure we have somebody who can step into your shoes and make decisions for you if you ever lost mental capacity. And then it's having a really clear roadmap as to where the assets are going to go, how they're going to get there, and who's going to manage them if somebody passes away. All right. And many times people jump to, if I die, what happens to my stuff? But they don't even realize that the incapacity part is a big part of this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things I'm hearing this and I'm like, well, I got two nickels to rub together. Does this still apply to me?
Yeah. So the reality is that if anything happens medically, you want someone to be able to make those choices about your medical care. A lot of people don't recognize that it's the hospital. They have to keep you alive, right? Mm. And families can get into a lot of fighting over situations as
could
happen medically, right? And so you tend to be the more people in the family, the harder the situation. So your medical proxy, that's the person that can really step up into your shoes and make medical decisions for you if you're unable to make them for yourself. It doesn't matter how much money you have or how little money you have. It's really, you are a living, breathing person that's over 18 years old, and there needs to be someone that can make that choice for you. So yeah, even with the other side of incapacity planning is we deal with that with what's called a power of attorney. Your power of attorney is that person that can step into your shoes if you lose mental capacity and look after your legal decisions and your finances. So going to the bank, paying your bills. If you're a young student, you know, canceling your classes with the registrar. So those pieces, they're really not financially dependent. It's just if you don't have them in place, that's when the court gets involved and cost becomes an issue and families start to fight. And we're just trying to eliminate that right off the bat.
And so one of the other, you brought up, you know, being a young college person, because yeah, I wouldn't think I would need a power of attorney as a college, but you're absolutely right that if you're over 18 in college, they're like, I don't give a shit that you're their parent. Like,
right, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So we basically, for all of our, you know, clients who have kids who are going off to college, we do very basic documents for them. We say, look, here's your medical proxy. If something happens medically, here's your power of attorney. A lot of parents don't recognize that once that child reaches 18,
yes.
You know, the doctors can't give you information. You're not calling and making their appointments. You're not getting test results. And so the scary part is if something happens on the campus, you're not going to get information about that. And it right. doesn't matter who's paying the bill. That's the other part. They think, oh, because I'm paying for it, I'm going to get to know grades and I'm going to get to know what's happening. And unfortunately, they are a legal adult at that point in time. And right. so just making sure you can make those decisions is important.
But then like, let's also take it to the other spectrum. What about my parents? You know, so, you know, this wasn't stuff that was talked about. As, right. you know, when I was a kid. So, you know, my parents are in their 70s. So, you know, fortunately, they do have all of this in place. But that's even more of a critical time to have this medical stuff down.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And the other piece of this is it has to be put in place, your power of attorney, your medical proxy, before somebody loses mental capacity.
Okay? Yes.
And you can't, by the time you meet it, it's too late. So it needs to be a preventative conversation. So with parents especially, you know, we have a higher likelihood of living with a cognitive impairment versus dying prematurely. That's just the reality. When you think dementia, when you think of Alzheimer's. So by having the document in place that says, look, here's this person that can't make decisions for themselves, but I can make it for them, you're avoiding a ton of court involvement and cost. You're avoiding what's called a conservatorship, and you're literally giving, you know, yourself the opportunity to make those decisions for your parents when they're just simply can't make them for themselves any longer.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, you know, I've have several friends whose, you know, spouses or parents are in that, you know, mental incapacitation state right now. And fortunately, they do have protections, but it's like you said, it's forewarned is forearmed.
Right. Yeah. And it's very interesting. Once you enter that space, you kind of live and die by the power of attorney. You don't recognize, you know, something as basic as canceling the cable bill to something as complex as kind of getting them into that facility. You get to do everything. And it's completely. Incredibly beneficial.
Completely. So, you know, we talked about medical. Now, what about, you know, putting together a will, you know, is that important? Or can I, you know, my uncle died recently and he had a book and he wrote in this book, and he told his whole family, he's like, in this book, I'm writing down all my stuff.
Yeah.
Is a book.
So, you know, unfortunately, many states and in particular Massachusetts, we have very strict requirements with regards to how those, you know, final wishes need to be written out and how they're notarized and how they're witnessed in specific language. And so, you know, a book doesn't quite cut it anymore, unfortunately. I hear time and time again, one of the biggest myths I hear about this idea about estate planning is that, you know, if you have a will, you can avoid what's called that probate process. So probate, for any of you that don't know, that's really the court's oversight of how assets get from an individual person's name to their family when they pass away.
And a lot of times people think, oh, but if I have a will and I saw an attorney and it's all laid out, I don't have to go through that court process. But that's actually not true. The will is the document that kind of puts you in that probate land, okay? You're still subject to the estate timeline. Your assets are frozen until somebody can get appointed. And it just can take time. It exposes all of your assets to creditors. We talk with a lot of our clients as to, okay, do you own a house in Massachusetts? Do you have other property? And if the answer is yes, you know, a will is probably not going to be the thing that's going to cut it for you. We really talk about trust-based planning. We don't have time to go into the details of that, but trusts come in all different shapes and sizes. And the reality is, if you're looking for a way to keep assets within the family, to keep the court out of your life, and to allow instant access, a trust is really the way to go.
Gotcha. And so, do I need to, I guess, you know, in my mind, when I hear trust, that like what you just said makes so much sense. Like, oh, I want, you know, whoever to get whatever they want without having to go through, you know, the rigmarole of the court process.
Yep.
But I think, you know, if I'm listening, I'm like, well, trusts are only for the rich people.
Right. Yeah, that's another really common misconception. And, you know, the reality is trusts are for people, like I said, who not only want to keep things private and keep it out of the court, but they're really for people who have minor children. So many people don't know that minor children cannot inherit money via a will. So if they do, the court actually tracks every single penny of that until the child reaches the age of 18. So then you have all this intervention. Then the child reaches 18 and the court walks away. So it's extreme oversight. And then an 18-year-old walks into a life insurance policy or say a house in Massachusetts. I don't know about you, but that's probably not the best use of distribution for an 18-year-old, right? It's like how far before the cars in the driveway or they're taking a trip or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So with the trust, you can really use it as a standalone bucket to kind of hold those assets for those kids. Everything gets paid into that trust. You have somebody else oversee it and it gets distributed when you pick, not at age 18. A lot of people think you have a certain dollar amount, but you know, for anybody who has a life insurance policy, for example, or a retirement plan, that might not be money in your pocket right now, but that's definitely a large sum of money for somebody who's young. So you kind of have the trust is that bucket to hold it. So even if you're not walking around, you know, again, Massachusetts assets are worth a lot. Your house is worth a lot here, right?
Right.
You may not feel it, but you definitely have more than you think typically.
And I think you're absolutely right. Cause you know, even if your house is worth $300,000, that's still $300,000.
Exactly. And,
you know, that's nothing to snuff at. And if you truly, like you said, you have minor kids and you want your kids to, even if whoever you leave your kids to, you want them to have a roof over their head. You know, you want to make sure that the court doesn't come in and say, well, we got all these debts to pay. So the house goes and now your kids are, you know, sleeping in the Camry.
Right. Exactly. It's just a way to keep it sort of the control within the family. And you know, anything that the kids need that trustee can pay out for, but it's, let's make the trustee decide and not the court.
Yeah. Where, you know, so what you're saying is that when I create a trust, I decide who is going to be in charge of it versus the court coming in and making their best recommendation.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So now this is another thing that you brought up when we first met that just like blew my mind. So, you know, I have kids and I say, oh, well, my sister's gonna, you know, take care of them, you know, in the event that I'm incapacitated or God forbid I've passed away. And then you said, well, what if your sister who lives in California? Like, and it's 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
What's gonna happen? Yep. And right. I was like, holy crap, you're absolutely right. Because I think that's what most people think, like, oh, my sister will take care of them. But you don't think of the logistics.
Yeah, there's a knock at the door and then what happens, right?
Yeah.
It tends to be overlooked quite a bit, but the way I kind of let people know is, look, we have guardianship. Your permanent guardian is that person that's going to step in and raise the kids day to day, and everything's going to be great. You can pick whoever you want, right? But then you should really think about who's going to be a temporary guardian. Your temporary guardians are kind of like the rescue force, like who can come within 20 minutes really quick. There's a knock at the door, and you know, they can really take guardianship of those kids for that temporary period of time until your sister who's out in California can come, right? And watch the children. So you might have named somebody who's on vacation or lives in a different part of the country or anything like that. And you want to make sure that there's a temporary guardian to cover that gap so that there's no state intervention. And I think this goes, it speaks to how a lot of people try to, you know, shortcut the estate planning process. You know, when you go online and you just try to fill out a form, that's the distinction between like counseling versus just filling out a paper and hoping for the best, right? You want to make sure you have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed.
Right. And you know, I know I'm all about cost cutting. I'm all about that. But at the same time, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I'm like, I would rather, instead of Googling my way to it,
right,
sit across right from a competent professional who I can ask those questions to, because, you know, I don't know in an online form if someone would ask me the question about the temporary guardianship.
Right. Exactly.
You know, they would ask me like, who do I want my, you know, who should raise my kids? And, you know, we talked about this in our kind of pre-call where, you know, in order to get a kid out of school, like, you pretty much have to give like a vial of blood.
Oh, you're giving a kidney at this point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which, yeah, it's come a long way. I mean, we have locked doors and buzzers and it's all for the safety for the kids. And we've recognized that as important. But yeah. So how are you going to have that proper document that's actually going to let the state or the school or whomever release the child to who you've selected? That's a really good point.
Yeah. So, all of this is just, there's always like that, like question one, and then there's a question like 1B, 1C, 1D that kind of
yeah, exactly
fall underneath. And unless you do this every day or, you know, or you have to hear a horror story in order for you to kind of think about that. You and I talked about this. A woman here in Massachusetts, she was married but didn't have a will. And her husband, they found relatives in another country and they inherited his house.
Yeah. 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 And it's especially, you know, more complex for people who are on second marriages, for people who have family in different countries, for you make this assumption that it's going to go to your spouse, but hey, now all of a sudden you have a situation where you're splitting assets between a spouse and, you know, relatives in another country. So, you know, the court has very hard and fast rules about the bloodline and how people inherit and what that looks like. And unfortunately, emotions don't matter in those situations. And so that's why it's so incredibly important to have stuff written down in a legal document to get you out of that sort of mess. You know, that situation was so sad because the young woman who had lived in that house her entire life, who had, you know, basically been raised by this man, now all of a sudden was kicked out, and this house was going to people that she had never even met before.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think so many of us think that marriage, be it first, second, third, or 10th marriage, the current spouse automatically inherits.
Right. And it's not the case when you do have, like I said, blended family situations, different children involved. It's not an automatic.
Yeah. So it's, you know, really, another sad story. A good friend of ours, their nanny, married maybe 3 months, the husband died in an accident, they only been married 3 months, didn't take the time to, you know, fill out all the paperwork, and left her with nothing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's really, There's no automatic. I guess that's the best way I can put it. There really isn't an automatic assumption that just because you have a relation or because you've been living with somebody forever or that there is emotion behind it. You know, the courts, unfortunately, can't take that into consideration. So getting back to how I say, like, it's an empowerment conversation. If you do want to buck the current, if you want to make sure that you provide for specific people, it's important to write it down.
Right. So the first question I have is, so let's go back to parents. So your parents, mm-hmm. you know, how do you start that conversation? You know,
yeah.
Is it Thanksgiving dinner and you're like, the turkey's not dry this year, Mom. Thanks.
Right.
Do you have
right.
a will?
Yeah, no, I understand. It can be an incredibly different conversation to have. You know, I went through the declining health of my husband's grandparents where, you know, very staunch Italian patriarch. We don't talk about these things mm-hmm. and it just doesn't get discussed generationally. And his grandmother was having dementia and his grandfather, his health was just failing. And I get how complex that can be because we've done the, we have to take the car away. We've done the, we have to like tour facilities. But what I suggest people talk about is say, hey, you know, Mom or Dad, I just got my estate planning done. I just want to make sure you guys know where your documents are. Right? And then you can say, look, I don't need to look at them. You don't need to let me know what's in them, but I just want to make sure that you know where your originals are and that we know where to find them if God forbid something should happen to you. And so that very basic question of where are they sparks the initial reaction. So you'll either see the fear, they'll tell you where it is, right? Like you'll kind of get a sense of where they fall on that spectrum.
Right.
But what I've recognized is it's a lot easier approaching the subject by saying, hey, I just went through this process. Like there are a couple things I want to talk to you about and just want to know where your things are at.
Right. And it's so like my uncle with his book. So everyone knows.
Right.
And you know, my uncle was a little eccentric. So the book just like, it just was the perfect ending of his life. So,
not unexpected there, huh?
No, not at all. Like, and you know, he called my mom out of the blue and he's like, Pat, I got this book. It's sitting on this shelf. Everyone knows where it is. They know, grab that book and send it to you.
Perfect. Perfect. Right. And no, it's so good because that's what I, you know, I go through and you got a book, right? I put a book together because I want to make sure people aren't digging through desk drawers and closets and offices and, you know, or that they haven't put their plan in some safety deposit box that they never told anybody about, or they didn't put it in the safe where nobody has the combination.
Right.
You know, those things happen.
And no one has the key.
And nobody has the key. Right. And then we got to get the court involved to go get it. So yeah, it's really funny, but so true. You know, we don't put sensitive information. There are no social security numbers in the document. So basically it's where's the particular shelf, where's the particular drawer, and then tell people where it is, because it's more important for it to be accessible than us to be like recreating what we thought this person would have done.
Right. And so, you know, if I'm now my interest is piqued, you know, one of my magic makers, their interest is like, all right, you know, she's making some sense, because the whole conversation came to me. It's like Kobe Bryant is 41 years old. He was going to a basketball game.
I know.
And, you know, on the way out the door, you know, his wife is probably like, hey, make sure you bring home some milk. And
yeah, exactly. Right.
And then you wonder, you're like, okay, so you get that call and you're just like, fuck. Like,
what next? Yeah.
What next? Now what? So I would rather the now what to be more about how do I go on living without this person versus mm-hmm. now what? Like, am I going to be like homeless?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's so true. And you also bring up a really good point where, you know, they're thinking about dinner, they're thinking about the weekend, they're thinking about all these other things. And the now what should really be focused on the grief and the recovery versus how do I get the life together? Right.
Yeah.
So to that extent, I've had, unfortunately, so many situations where there's been one spouse, quote unquote, on charge and the other spouse doesn't really know.
Yes.
And, you know, I just can't stress enough that even if like numbers aren't your thing or you don't do finance, right? Find that person, that advisor, that whomever that you can sit and talk with so that if something does happen, you can pick up a phone and have a confidant to kind of walk you through, okay, what are those next steps? You know, pull your team together, so to speak, because, all right, you might not, it may not be your thing, but you owe it to yourself just to have a general sense of what's going on and where do you go next if, God forbid, something does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, as we go back to that, you know, having a trust, if you have that trustee in place, they're the person who is the voice of reason. Because during this time, personally, I know I probably wouldn't be the voice of reason. You're still yeah. very emotional. And, right. you know, you have that person who's like, all right, we know what the plan is and I'm just going to follow the playbook.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's reassuring in many respects.
Right. So like you said, where, you know, the surviving spouse can just focus on the grieving.
Yep, absolutely.
So what would be, you know, people are listening like, okay, you've driven the point home. What would you say are, you know, the most important documents that I should have?
Yeah. So we kind of pulled together what we consider like a standard trust plan, right? And so what's included in that is your trust that avoids probate, the medical proxy that allows someone to make medical decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself, your power of attorney that allows somebody to make legal and financial decisions for you if you're incapacitated and can't make them for yourself. Your living will is that document that says, okay, look, you know, if I'm in a permanent vegetative state and there's no chance of recovery, I do not want to be kept alive with machines. Because you can have somebody as a decision maker, but it's really important that that person knows what they should be doing in the event that there is no recovery, right? We also do what's called a HIPAA release, which is very important for children who turn 18. It gives doctors permission to speak to family members that in case something happens. We do the guardianship appointments, both temporary and permanent. And then we make sure that there's a will, a last will and testament in case something doesn't make it to the trust. So it all kind of comes together in this package with the overarching umbrella called estate planning, right? The estate plan are the different documents, and then the different documents play specific roles within the entire plan.
Yeah. And everything you just laid out is basically what we've talked about during this entire conversation. It's
exactly.
It's, you know, God forbid you get into an accident and you're not able to make any decisions about yourself. Or as, yep. you know, as we talk about aging parents, you know, every 65 seconds, someone's going to be diagnosed with some Alzheimer type disease. So it gives you that. And then the power of attorney, you know, like you said, my 18-year-old kid goes off to college and I'm technically not supposed to know anything about them anymore.
Right. Right. You don't get the grades just because you pay the bill. Right.
Right. And you know, if they have to go to a doctor in another state, that doctor don't know me from a hill of beans, where it's not like the family doctor who I've driven yeah. them to since they were a newborn.
The whole time. Exactly. Yep.
So that's very powerful. And then the whole, you know, bit about trust, you know, I don't need to be a Rockefeller to have a trust.
No, definitely not. Like I said, the importance there in the trust is how do we get immediate access and how do we keep you out of the court? And that is the ultimate goal.
Right. And now in that basic package would also come, if I had minor children, would come that, you know, temporary guardianship as well as the permanent guardianship.
Yeah, absolutely. And another point I just want to bring up is, look, you could think somebody is the greatest parent under the sun, but maybe you don't think that they're very great with money.
Yeah,
so you actually, you know, you have the option of making your guardian, who does the day-to-day raising of the child, be different than the trustee, who's the one who manages the finances and the assets. So that's a really beneficial thing to know when you're coming up with like checks and balances and who can do money and who can't.
Yeah, and it would also, I think, be helpful if you had two people, you know, where it's, because if I think about, you know, if we had kids, like, you know, there's some people in your family who are very emotional driven, and right. there's some people who are very practical driven.
Right. So having those two people work together could be a great thing. Yes, absolutely. Right.
So it would be, you know, it would be able to have that kind of that, you know, that yin and that yang, if you will.
Yep, absolutely. 100%.
Let's see. Now, I have a few like last questions. So in this world of like hyper mobility, if I make a will here in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and, you know, if I say move to, you know, Kathmandu,
yeah,
is that still applicable?
So the thing about a trust, all right, we'll kind of take this in pieces. The trust can be taken with you anywhere that you go.
Okay.
So if you have a trust and you put your assets in it and you move anywhere in the world, that's fine. You can take the trust with you. The thing about the local sort of documents, so like a medical proxy or a power of attorney or even a will, like if you live in Massachusetts and you move to Florida, it's really important that you meet with an estate planning attorney where you move to get at least the basics updated.
Gotcha.
Because you don't want to be in a situation where you go to a hospital, right? And they look at the document and they say, we don't know what this is. It looks different than what we use here.
Right.
Unfortunately, estate planning is state specific. So you want to make sure that any state you go to, you really do touch base with another estate planning attorney to make sure that it's up to speed with where you are.
Gotcha.
That being said, typically when you're moving, it's because you've had a life change, right? And so it's a ripe time for your documents to be reviewed anyway. You know, the person you are in your 20s is not the same as when you have little kids, is not the same when you're nearing retirement, right?
Gotcha.
So these aren't documents that are one and done. You really want to see them as like a living, breathing, evolving thing so that they really fit the needs at whatever station you're in life.
Got you. So in my head, I'm thinking at a bare minimum, you know, I'm looking at them when I first get them done. And if there is, you know, a life event, if I, at the time I make these documents, I do or don't have children, I would make another, I would revisit them at the time I have children.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then I would do another revisit at the time that I have, you know, I'm either nearing retirement or in retirement to make another, you know, sweep at the documents.
Yeah, of course. Right. And the thing is, you know, we can have the laws can change. So we like to do a touch about every 3 years or so, but the main sort of benchmark is, what's a life change? Has there been a birth or a death or a divorce, or has anybody who you've nominated, are they living somewhere else, or is that not a good fit any longer?
Gotcha.
So anytime something's happened to the immediate family, anytime something's happened to anybody who you've selected to participate in your plan, that's a great time to update.
Gotcha. Yeah. That all of those, you know, make complete and utter sense. And yeah, I mean, this has been, you know, first of all, every time I talk to you, it's just eye-opening. I'm like, I never thought of, like, when you move states, I'm like, I assume that you're done. You're like, check the box, moving on.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, the law can be nuanced. So that's why I say, like, just having the information is the best thing that you can do for yourself.
Right. So is there any like last bits that people can, you know, think about, you know, as they're like, I got to get this done. Is there any last pieces of information that you would like to share?
Yeah. So, you know, I like to tell people that estate planning is something that chose me. You know, I didn't necessarily choose estate planning. I didn't go to law school and think, oh, you know, I really want to write wills. That's so exciting. that was not the vision. I was actually doing environmental litigation and it was a totally different life. And then, my dad passed away, completely unexpectedly without a plan in place.
Ah.
And so when he passed away, we were still probating my grandfather's estate. And we were stuck in double probate with property in another state, and Massachusetts had just changed the entire probate code. So every form that everybody had used forever and ever had just been changed.
Ugh.
So I really walked into that, like, I got a real quick education. And, you know, I did recognize that I made the assumption that people just had everything in order. And if I could, you know, give any piece of advice to anybody, it's don't assume.
you know, don't assume that your parents have taken care of it. Don't assume that, you know, a spouse has it handled. Actually ask the question, because it's a way to open up dialogue. It's a way to open up communication between the family. And it's just a way to have a better understanding of what their wishes are. And I had made an assumption and just, you know, thought, oh yeah, it's handled. And it wasn't. So ask. It's the best thing you can do.
Yeah, agreed. It is, I think it always is the a crisis that shows you your life path.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yeah, and so, you know, we've told you like sad stories of people who thought everything was going to be okay and it wasn't. And all it takes is, you know, it was like what, 5 different forms to like cover your ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You can wield a lot of power with the pen.
Yeah. And so, and also just, it gives clarity. You know, I know that my husband and his sister, you know, it's just the two of them. And I know that if my mother-in-law didn't make very clear things, there'd be a lot of back and forth.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's definitely, the more cooks in the kitchen, the harder, or even with a smaller, just one sibling, you know, we come to the table with assumptions and family dynamics, right? And those mm-hmm. dynamics don't go away when somebody passes away, they just get worse. So the more clear you can be with what you want to have happen, the better it is for everybody.
Right. And, you know, fortunately they get along, but I can only imagine if it was a case where siblings didn't get along.
Exactly. Yep. 100%. And so, you know, you as the person in charge of yourself, you know what those personalities are going to be. You can plan for that.
Exactly. And, you know, like we said, you have that conversation. So that way, you know, no one's surprised that this is what you want and this is what's going to be the outcome.
Right. And the best person that knows your family is you and not the court. So, you know, the idea of just taking that out of the court's hands.
Yeah, because it's like in court, I could seem completely sane, but outside of court, I'm as crazy as a loon. And knows that.
Exactly.
No one knows
nobody
that
knows.
Family.
Sure.
Everyone always has that hidden family kook.
Yeah. Very true. 100%.
And sometimes they're not that hidden, but we all have the family kook that, you know, we got to make sure we're paying attention to. So, Amy, to wrap up this conversation, what is one thing that would make you feel magical?
One thing that makes me feel magical or my clients feel magical?
Makes you feel magical. And it could be about a client.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing that makes me feel magical is just knowing that I am waking up every single day, putting my heart forward to serve people. And I'm living my purpose. And I know I'm doing good in this world.
Awesome. 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 I love that. You know, you always want to wake up in the morning with a smile on your face. And so I'm glad that you are able to do that. So Amy, I know you only write for the state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
But where can people find you just in case they have any, you know, questions or they are in the state of Massachusetts and would love to work with you? Subtle hint, work with her if you're in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find my website. So my firm is Family Legal Partners, www.familylegalpartners.com. You can always email me, amy@familylegalpartners.com, or give me a call, 508-803-1333, extension 2. And I'd love to help. And if you are outside of Massachusetts or you need a recommendation for an attorney in another state, feel free to drop me a line.
Awesome. Amy, this is again, always like, I always walk away with some knowledge from this conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kim. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Fit Girl Magic podcast. If you've made it this far, yay. I'm thinking you enjoyed the show. Let's continue the conversation on Instagram. You can find me at Kim Jefferson Coach. In order for me to keep sharing this message, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. New episodes are available every Wednesday. The Fit Girl Magic Podcast is intended to provide you with tips, tools, and strategies that will help you make better decisions about your health. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much.